What does it really take to be successful? Today's guest has reviewed thousands of applications, interviewed countless candidates, and ultimately admitted over 5,000 people into one of the top MBA programs in the world. In other words, he knows what separates those who make it from those who don't. In this episode, we talk about the patterns he's seen in high achievers, a blend of competence and reciprocity, and why your 20s should be an adventure decade to explore and discover your path. We talk about mindset, authentic leadership, and using informational interviews to accelerate growth. If you've ever wondered what top leaders, entrepreneurs, and changemakers have in common at the start of their journeys, this episode is for you. Let's get started. Welcome to Business Isn't Hard. Today, I'm joined by Dylan Stafford, Assistant Dean at the UCLA Anderson School of Management, where he's helped shape the lives and careers of over 5,000 MBA students through his leadership of the fully employed MBA program. He's also the creator and the host of the Drive Time podcast, now with nearly 100 episodes featuring Olympic gold medalists, entrepreneurs, faculty, changemakers, all sharing their personal journeys through UCLA and beyond. But Dylan's impact doesn't stop on campus. He's also an author twice over. He's written two books, the second of which just came out. From Siemens in Germany to the halls of UCLA in Los Angeles, Dylan has built a career around helping people find their voice, step into leadership, and go home at the end of the day appreciated and valued. I'm really excited for this one. Welcome to the show, Dylan. How are you?
Well, Oliver, this is fun. Thanks for having me.
I'm so glad you could be here. I'd love to talk a little bit about your time at UCLA, but beforehand, can you walk me through how you even got here in the first place?
Well, my mother and father had a romantic dinner. So I've been in California about 20 years. I'm 56. I grew up an hour and a half north of Dallas, right on the border with Oklahoma, right where East Texas ends and West Texas begins. So if you drove 15 miles east of my home, it was the piney woods and people talk real slow and southern like that. And then if you drove 15 miles west, the trees end and it opened up and you start to hear that, how you doing? That, you know, that nasally cowboy twang. And I loved it. It was a very Huckleberry Finn type of childhood. One high school and very much Friday Night Lights and the whole Texas stereotype. So, you know, and from there, I went to Texas A&M undergrad, was in the Corps of Cadets, a 7-day-a-week uniformed military, the largest ROTC outside of the academies, and a real epic experience. I still have some of my best friends in life. There's 10 of us on the text thread, and we went through that 4-year experience together. You know, people who sweat together, stick together, that band of brothers and sisters kind of experience. And absolutely love Texas A&M. And then I was like, I want to get a graduate degree before I'm 30. My father spent 10 years pursuing a PhD. He never completed the PhD. So the MBA, I went to Chicago Booth. It was not yet called Chicago Booth. It was the University of Chicago Graduate School of Business back in the day. So I went to get an MBA, and I just showed up at Chicago and said, okay, you know, teach me how to make money.
There you go.
And they patted me on the head and said, oh, you naive little guy. Because I was probably the second youngest person in my class. I only ever met one person younger than me.
Wow.
We were about 550 people in, so 11 cohorts of 50. And there was a guy, Brad Shamanik, who was younger than me, but I was only 2 years out of undergrad. And I just didn't really understand the sort of assembly line that a full-time MBA is, where you need to work 3 to 5 years post-undergrad to be a good input, and then you're going to get on the conveyor belt and you're going to have this great education year one. You're going to have a killer internship over the summer. You're going to come back. Hopefully you're going to get a full-time offer. You're going to polish up with your second year, and then you're going to re-enter the workforce 21 months later. And, you know, and your salary should have doubled or, you know, 2.5x from what it was before. And I just wasn't, I was really green and junior. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't really showing up properly. And they kind of patted me on the head and said, you know, okay, you must be our token You're our token East Texas boy. And I got the education, I got the experience, I got the confidence, I got the credential, and it did work for me. My first job was a Fortune 500 job with an international German, company, Siemens, and I spent 6.5 years there.
And you lived in Germany, right? I'm sure that was a bit of a change from, small
Well,
town Texas.
I did. I started in San Jose. I was actually in Silicon Valley from 95 to 97 after I graduated, which was 30 years ago, which is crazy. But I graduated with my MBA in 95. I was 26, turning 27. And, first real job, first job with a tie. I'd never even had a real job. So it was pretty cool to cut my teeth in a Fortune 500 environment. And to answer your question, yeah, I worked really hard at communicating to everybody that I wanted to go to Germany. I took German classes on my own. I bought $700 worth of German tapes and listened to them as I drove from Texas to California. And then on day one, I asked my boss, my new boss, my brand new boss, I said, "Remember when you said I might learn German? Well, could I get reimbursed if I donate these tapes?" But I was serious about it. And yeah, I would pick Germans up at the airport. I was just Germany, Germany, Germany. And they were always sending people over for short-term assignments or, 1 week or 2 week. And I was always just kind of tour guiding and just accidentally met this woman named Elvira. And she was probably 55, 60, and she was kind of an admin person. And I was showing her around, just being nice. And 3 weeks later, another man came, but I told Elvira, "Oh, I want to go to Germany." And she went back to Germany, and 3 weeks later, another man came, Jürgen Zinner, and he was Elvira's boss, but I didn't even realize it. And he took me to coffee, and we talked, and he was very jovial and very nice. And about 3 weeks later, I got this inner office envelope. This is back, pre-email, and it was on this really fancy paper. And I opened it up, and it was Herr Lieber Stafford, and they gave me this 3-year promotion to the world headquarters, and it was epic. It was epic. So here I am, little Dylan from Denison, Texas, 240 people in my graduating class from high school. And now I'm at a Fortune 500 world headquarters, all expenses paid, corporate apartment for 3 years. My salary doubled. I paid off half of my graduate school loans. When I tell MBA students about that outcome, I say that was my one of, but the biggest of my wow MBA results, like one of those, like, I just have zero imagination to envision this outcome if I hadn't taken the leap, left Texas, gone for the graduate degree, applied to the fancy school, showed up, manned up, dealt with all the imposter syndrome, because I felt like everyone's, my entire time at grad school, I felt like everyone's younger, slower, shorter kid brother. I felt like a kid brother. Everybody, I didn't laugh at the right time in the class discussion. I didn't know the cool companies to apply for. I didn't know the cool jobs to try to get. I just felt like I was one, two, or three steps behind everyone. I got this killer launch to my
It
career
worked
out
out
of
for
it.
you, yeah.
So I think maybe for your listeners a little bit from some of the episodes that I've listened with, and that was my 20s, really, was that chapter. And what I loved about that chapter was it was an adventure. Chicago was an adventure, graduate school was an adventure, living outside of the state for the first time was an adventure, putting myself into a totally different discipline was an adventure. And then 6.5 years with Siemens was just incredible. Silicon Valley, that's a special part of the world. Got to experience that for 2 years. And then to live in Europe and have like the money to travel and to see the seasons change. So, for business isn't hard. One piece of advice that I'm a big believer in, and I will tell my two sons, I have two sons, 18 and 13. But I think a great way to think about your 20s is, this is the adventure decade. Unless you've just already fallen in love and you've met your soulmate, that's a different story. My parents got married at 22. Best thing that ever happened to them, and they're still going 60 years later. But if unless that has happened, it's a great decade to try things and to see what's out there and to be okay that you haven't got it figured out yet. Because in the process of trying things, and that's not it, and that's not it, and that's not it, you'll figure out what it is. And then in your 30s and your 40s and your 50s, at least my experience has been, then I fell in love. And then in the last 20 years, been here in Los Angeles, got a little foot in the door job at UCLA, then became the director of admissions, did that for a decade, became an assistant dean 12, 13 years ago. I'm in the process now of creating a new chapter. I'm going to support alumni now that I know 5,000 graduates. I've done some really fun stuff here. That's me. That's me. So here I am, 56. I think that, to put a bow on it, I'm 56. I've been married 23 years, I think, 22, 23 years. I have healthy children. I have a position in society where I get to make a difference for people, and I get to kind of pay attention to what's going on. I get to live in a very dynamic city in a very interesting state, different from where I grew up. But I'm always, either with my in-laws or my parents for the holidays. So, I'm very much an optimist. I'm a glass half full kind of person, and I love getting to be a human being on the planet in 2025.
There
Right?
you go.
If you want to make things happen, it's an incredible time to be alive. If you don't like change, it's a very stressful time to be alive.
Yeah. No,
So.
exactly. So, first of all, incredible story. Absolutely amazing. You've done so many things. I mean, like you said, you've talked to five, or you've admitted 5,000 plus graduate, and these are students, and you've seen them all do like really incredible things, have over 100 like plus episodes talking to these people. Are there any like core values or similarities that you see across all of these successful people that you've worked with that, kind of time together? Any common threads?
Yeah, lots. I think ultimately, with John Wooden, success, no, how does John Wooden has so many great coaches. And if you don't know John Wooden, he's the, one of the winningest coaches of all time. He won 10 national championships with UCLA basketball in the 60s and 70s. He coached Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Bill Walton and a host of others. And part of his legacy was so far beyond basketball, because he wrote this thing called The Pyramid of Success. I have it on the wall behind me here. And it's really a life, it's an approach to life based on him training world-class athletes. And one of the things he loved to say is, talent may get you to the top, but it takes character to stay there. And to answer your question, one of the through lines that I see is that second part of the Wooden quote. Yeah, you need talent to kind of get in the room, but it's your comportment, it's your character, it's how you are with other people that keeps you in the room. Long-term success is about competence and reciprocity. You have to take the time to develop your competence. And I'm a huge fan of Jordan Peterson's psychological teachings on development through time. And one of the things he says is we do such a disservice to 18-year-olds when we tell them, we pat them on the head and say, you could be anything you want, And he says the disservice of that is that that's factually not true. I can't be anything I want. I have to do the hard work to discern for myself what are my gifts and talents. If I want to be 7 feet tall and I'm not 7 feet tall, wishing it is not going to make it come true. So, I'm a faith person. My father's a minister. Faith is hugely important to me. And there's something bigger than me. And whatever that something is, I choose to call it God, gave me a bundle of talents and a big bundle of shortcomings. I got a long laundry list of character defects. But then there are a couple things that I do well, and then there may be one or two things that I do extremely well, especially if I work on it. And so this starts to be the 10,000 hours, the 10,000 hours to mastery. And what Peterson says is, a much more useful thing to tell an 18-year-old is, what would you like to be a decade from now? And are you willing to aim at whatever that is consistently and put in the hours for a decade? Because if you are, then you got a shot. And what I like about that advice, and it's what I'm giving it to my 18-year-old who's off to be a college freshman, you have to figure out where the three circles overlap. What are you good at? What do you want to do? And what does the world pay for? First circle is what are you good at? And you can't lie to yourself. You're either good at something or you're not, or you have the potential to be good at something. So first circle is what are you good at? Second circle is what do you want to do? And that's and nobody's going to answer that question but you. And that's back to use your 20s to see what's out there. Because you can't, how can you know if you want to do it until you try? And then the third circle, and of course it's a Venn diagram where these circles overlap in the middle. The third circle is what does the world pay for? Finding that sweet spot in the middle. And it's not going to be one thing. It's going to be multiple things. Most of us are not going to have a consistent employer over decades. And that only even happened in America for, that was only the decades after World War II anyway. The whole idea of lifetime employment is historically inaccurate. Pick one or two things that you want to have be your dominant way you spend your time when it comes time to making a living, but have some side hustles for God's sake. I think, if you want to have an interesting life, get interested in stuff. Go deep. Like geek, I love to geek out on whatever it is. Exercise, nutrition, parenting. You're writing books. I just finished that book last month, Daddy Muscles 2, and it was transformative. It's a I did I kept a blog, I kept a daddy diary during the early years of both of my boys. And it took me about 300 hours to take a bunch of those blog entries and turn them into a book. So, I want to share that with people.
So when you're, I mean, you're all about like trying different things, right? Trying to figure out what you want to do. And I think that's kind of the mindset going into it. But for people who are, in that process, entering their 20s or in their 20s, really trying to understand, what they're good at, what they enjoy doing, and what the world pays for. I mean, is there any way to accelerate it, enhance it maybe through talking to other people? Like, just curious on your thoughts of like the process you would take if you had to go back and rediscover, what your intersection between those three circles is.
Informational interviews are incredibly valuable. And an informational interview is different than a job interview because all you're seeking in an informational interview is information. And one of my best friends in high school, his father was a lawyer, and he said, if you want to find out what's out there in the world, first start to notice who looks happy.
Interesting.
And he said, in the process of noticing who's actually happy in their career, you'll notice how many people are not, firstly. And that's valuable to see. Like a ton of people are just slogging it out. So if they got no light on in their eyes, they may have a job that pays a lot of money, but if the lights are out and nobody's home, beware before you try to model your life after that. So his advice was look for people who are doing things that are of interest to you, who seem to be happy doing it. And then just get on their calendar. 15 minutes, gonna take you to coffee, 30 minutes, and all you're asking for is just how'd you get to be here? And you're just curious and you listen. And maybe at the end, you tell them a quick thumbnail about you. And your takeaway, your ask is, well, based on your story and based on what I've said about me, anybody you could recommend I might talk to? And almost always they'll say, you know who you should talk to is my business partner. Or you know who you remind me of? And then you just, it's just a follow your nose. And then after each interview, send a thank you, include your resume, and then pulse with people afterwards. 6 months later, hey, I just want to follow up. We met back in May. I just wanted to, I did have a chance to meet your business partner. Oh my goodness, she was incredible. She sent me to another person that she knows. I can't thank you enough. I've learned so much. Thank you again for your time. But you're leaving little breadcrumbs, and you're doing two super valuable things. You're learning from people who are happy in their career, and you're learning who they know. So you're getting far beyond the limits of your own network into the value of other people's network. So, number one, you're accruing great information from quality sources who you might ever want to be like 5, 10, 20, and 30 years from now. Number one. Number two, you're totally differentiating yourself from everybody else because nobody else is doing this. And you know, everything's so digital now. Who was that guy? His name was Diego, Don, no, Dylan. Some guy named Dylan. He was this young lad full of energy. Got on my calendar. I think it was back in May. Let me look up in my calendar. Oh yeah, here he is. You know, this guy, he might be perfect. You should, this is, he's like a little entrepreneur. The opportunity mostly is not there when you talk to them. Most people don't have a job they can hire you into at the moment. But over 3 months, over 6 months, over a year, when something pops up, you know who would be great for that is Oliver. So, you know, it's just a, it's a habit you can add into your 20s. You can keep going beyond. It's a really, really powerful habit. And just practice good manners. People forget the value of good manners. And good manners are so important. And when you treat people with dignity and respect, they'll treat you with dignity and respect. When you treat people transactionally, they'll never tell you. They'll just never call back. You know, so I'm a huge proponent of, you know, be the change you wish to see in the world. Whatever I'm doing, what I want in my jet stream or in my, you know, in the air around me, I want respect, dignity, workability.
Yeah, things like that. I mean, you clearly learned a lot, and I think, right, you have to pull on the resources that are available to you. And speaking of resources, I'd like to start a little lightning round. The
All
first
right.
question is, what is your favorite business book or podcast?
I am reading Charles Duhigg Super Communicators right now. And I'm in a book club. We're called Rich Nerds. I've been on this book club for 2 years. We meet, it's a mastermind. We meet every Thursday morning for an hour and we do a book a quarter. And right now we're doing Super Communicators by Charles Duhigg. He's also got a book called The Power of Habit. But it's all about people who are extra special in their ability to listen and their ability to connect people. So that's my current book, but I'm always reading, but that's my
Very
current book.
cool. That's awesome. What is your biggest pet peeve in business?
Pet peeve in business, either lack of integrity or inauthenticity or some combination. When people present one way in the meeting, when everybody's there and the boss is there, and then when you talk to them in the hallway and you get a very different version, I don't, you know, my goal is to be the same person. If you meet me in the hallway, or if you meet me in the boardroom, or if you meet me at my son's basketball game. So authenticity, and then integrity is like, don't say yes if you don't mean yes. If you don't have the time or the bandwidth or the interest, I'd rather have a clean no than a fake yes.
No, that makes a lot of sense. What is your best, and I know we've talked a little bit about this, but what is your best networking tip?
Follow up. You know, it's you make your money with the follow up, and that's the manners, and that's the do what you said you're going to do. If people give you anything, big, small, say thank you. But it's never, you know, the deal's not signed until the deal is signed, and people smiling and nodding in a meeting is not a signed anything, and where signatures happen, where contracts get completed, where relationships get forged is in the follow-up.
Interesting. Yeah, no, it's something a lot of people don't think to do too. So, what is a skill that every leader should have?
Oh yeah, listening and communication. You gotta get curious about other people. I have this brand new manager right now who used to be a partner with McKinsey, and he and I were talking this week, and he said, you know, if I give an employee a task and the employee goes off and then brings it back, it's probably going to be about a C plus. But then if the employee and I, if we start workshopping it together, we can probably get it up to a B. And then when we take that iteration and we take it out to the team and really let other people vote on it, then we have a chance to get it up to an A. You know, I just love that. You know, it's like none of us, the world is too fast and too complicated. We live in an age where you gotta be bendy flexy. I'm always on YouTube watching YouTube shorts, you know, just it's fascinating. It's just these little snippets, and a bunch of it's garbage, but there's a lot of gold in there too.
Yeah. No, seriously, a lot of the content people put out is super interesting, and you can lean on what they, what they're doing. Finally, last question, the lightning round. What is your go-to method for handling stress?
Prayer and meditation. I get up early, quiet time. I'm probably 50-50 extrovert introvert.
Interesting.
We live in kind of an extrovert world, but I am not a pure extrovert. I get exhausted by the end of the day walking, in a big world like this where I meet, 50 people a day on an average
Yeah.
day. So for me to stay grounded, and then taking care of my body. I geek out. I write down what I eat. I write down when I exercise so that I'm not using my body as a stress dump.
Yeah.
Just the Thursday night pig out, or I deserve a malt or whatever. It's like, when you're young and strong and vital, but later on when your metabolism slows down, it's easy to put on a pound a year and get to where your body's just not what you want it to be. I want it to be strong. I want it to be flexible. I want it to look nice. I want it to work. Yeah. So prayer and meditation, rest, hydration, good nutrition, food is medicine. But getting up early is the main one. I've been a 5 a.m. person for a long time, at least a decade. Some of it's having little kids, and some of it's just your body changes when you get older. But and that's when I write my books. I've actually written 3 books. I think I forgot to tell you, I have a middle book also, but
Oh, true, yeah.
I've written 2 books about being a father, and then I wrote a business book. And I've written all those books, between 5:30 and 6:30 in the morning.
Wow, there you go. Yeah, taking advantage of your quiet time, and taking care of your mind and body. I think that's super important. Well, thank you so much, Dylan, for being on. We'll end with this final question to wrap it up. Over the course of your life in general, what has been the biggest key to your success as a leader?
Leadership is an inside job, and leadership, before anybody's ever going to follow anyone, that person has to be able to lead themselves. And part of being able to lead oneself is to get clear, who the heck are you? And everything that's beautiful in my life is derivative of my parents, my faith. Without my parents and my faith, I would have never ever attracted a woman. I won the lottery, and that is not a guarantee, and she could dump me tomorrow. Although in her family, she says she's from a big Catholic Polish Italian family from New Jersey. In her family, it's divorce never, murder maybe. And then because I have a partnership with her, and because she's a family-oriented person, to get to be a father. So the leader I get to be out there in the world sits on top of the foundation of all of that. Because my parents taught me to focus on value, because I have a faith tradition, because I have a home life, like I know who I am and I know who I am not. So if I'm going to lead, and leading can look a lot of ways. It could be leading from the front, it could be leading from the back, it could be leading from the side, it could be quiet leadership, it could be servant leadership. There's 100 ways to lead, but they all require that leader to be grounded in who they really are, to bring integrity, to bring authenticity, to bring an attitude of looking at what's bigger than who they are, and to be the energy source for whatever the endeavor is. Because what is lead? Lead means to go somewhere. So if we're not going anywhere, leadership's not required. If we're going to go somewhere, it's not going to be easy. There's going to be fits and starts and redos and start overs, and people are going to get frustrated. And if you're going to lead, you got to know who you are before anybody's going to give you the time of day. So, for me, humility, getting clear on the blessings. Because all there is to do with a blessing is never something to feel guilty about. A blessing is something to pay forward. That's how you know you've received a blessing, is when you figure out a way to pay it forward.
Yeah, I love that. Thank you so much, Dylan, again for being on. You have an incredible story. This was an amazing conversation. Thank you again so much.
Thanks for having me.
That was Dylan Stafford of the UCLA Anderson School of Business. Dylan spent his 20s experiencing life. In fact, he calls it the adventure decade. The goal is just that. To go on adventures, explore, and try to understand who you are and what you do. Part of that is developing yourself and developing competence. There are three circles to defining your career path: what you're good at, what you want to do, and what the world pays for. The intersection of these three areas, picture a Venn diagram, is what you want to pursue. But you have to really want it. Dylan advises that, instead of asking what do I want to be, ask where do I want to be a decade from now? And are you willing to put in the hours to get there for an entire decade? You have to truly think about your skills and your passions. These are what will guide you to where you're supposed to be. Finally, practice good manners. It comes down to the little things. Following up, saying please and thank you, listening and being curious. These are the things that set you apart, and they're a lot rarer today than you think. Thanks for listening. This week, I encourage you to ask yourself, where do you want to be in a decade? And from there, visualize the hours it will take to get there. Odds are, it won't be easy, but it will certainly be doable. I'll see you next time. In the meantime, keep building something great. Thanks for tuning in.